Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin, and helping you maneuver through this waning dystopia, it's episode number 483 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Crap Bag has the college football tradition that's going away in 2022. At 12:30, the NBA playoffs continue to churn out uninteresting games. And in mere minutes, the SEC is considering a bunch of different ideas on the future of the conference and the college football playoff, which are worth our time. I'm Trey Elling. Behind the glass today is a guy who does get his own intro on top of being an integral part of the Flex ATX team. He is also the newest addition to the Shirts and Skins team, maybe the best golfer and the nicest guy at the horn, both of which are admittedly pretty low bars, especially once you get past Rod Babers and Mike Harge with that nice guy routine. It is Cameron Parker. What's up, Cam? How you doing today?
Greetings and salutations.
Greetings and salutations to you, sir. And sitting across from me is the Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie, who certainly is not in the conversation for nicest guy at the horn. It is Chad Hastings.
You damn right. Hope everybody's having a good Tuesday. I am, I don't know if worried is the right word. Maybe it's concern. There's anticipation.
Scares you to death.
There's a scares you to death. It does kind of scare you to death. Because just about 2 to 3 minutes ago, I heard something that I've never heard before, and I'm a little freaked out. Minutes before that, Trey Elling told me that he is properly caffeinated or caffeinated again or the coffee's back or whatever. As I walked in this studio, Trey Elling began to do something I didn't know he could do, much less ever hearing him do, which is whistle. Not only was he whistling, but he was whistling the theme song of one of our great armed services. I think that's the Marines you were whistling.
On the land and on the sea. Is that not the new Harry Styles song?
It might be. That can get stuck in your head too. But so I don't know exactly what we're in for today, kids, but I am looking forward to it, Mr. Whistler.
Well, the key word, Chad, is caffeinated, and it's not properly caffeinated. It is caffeinated for the first time in several days. 3 weeks ago, I quit coffee. I've had it probably once a week since then for various reasons. Today it's because I just played volleyball.
Okay.
I know everybody's interested to hear that, but what you should know about that is when I play volleyball and I don't have any caffeine, I hit a wall at about 1 or 1:30 that I've come to realize over the last few weeks that I need to push myself through with the iced coffee in front of me, courtesy of Houndstooth Coffee, the domain location.
There it is.
Best coffee shop in Austin. They do a great job through several locations. But, yeah, I'm a little bit overly caffeinated as a result, Chad, because I don't drink this stuff with regularity right now. I will be back to that daily habit at some point, but it's good to take breaks from things that you love to show that you are stronger than the substance.
So is this also your military-grade, dented-up old canteen over here?
Yes, it is filled with water that has this this sodium powder in it that also has magnesium and potassium. It doesn't have any sugar, which is one of the things I'm trying to avoid while also making sure that I'm not losing too many fluids when I am doing something like playing volleyball on an extremely humid day.
Nice.
And because I was in a hurry to get up here because I was running a few minutes late going to get my lunch from Meat and Bread, underrated spot in this city. I know they've only been around for several months, but they serve this porchetta sandwich out of this world. I got the Caesar salad with the porchetta on top today. Really good. Mm-hmm. But because my hands were full, this was just one other thing that I grabbed. And as I was walking through the entrance into the building, I realized that I had it. I'm like, screw it. I'm not going to have to worry about going and getting bottled water today. I'm just going to drink my sodium water for the entirety of the show.
All right, so we got full power, Trey Elling, food snob, drink snob, and now caffeine powered. Cameron, are you prepared for this show today? Are you prepared for the energy you're getting from over here?
I don't think I've been here since Trey's been caffeinated, so
dude,
I don't know.
Yeah, get ready. True. You better get ready, brother.
Anxious.
I need to ask a question of Cam because I'm really struggling to come up with a way to bust his chops, and I'm busting the station's chops with the intro, but I need to know if I'm allowed to go here with you, Cam. If you say no, I completely understand, but am I allowed to bring up your true roots, your religious roots that we've talked about a long time ago on these airwaves?
Wow.
I don't know. Is that does that violate any HIPAA? Ethical laws in radio? I don't really know. I should.
Well, caffeine is really working now. Yeah. This is exciting.
Do you know what the religious roots are?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Cam?
No clue.
Jehovah's Witness.
He was J-Dub. Raised a Jehovah's
Is
Witness.
Is that right?
Yes.
Did you just say J-Dub?
Yeah.
Is that what the kids are calling it these days?
Sure.
J-Dub, shout out!
Are you still a Jehovah's Witness?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right.
So, I don't know. That feels like that might be over the line to have fun with somebody's religion. So I just need to get creative with how I bring it up if I choose to bring it up.
It might be. You'll learn things about him on the way.
Like, you're a godless heathen, so I have no problem mocking you for that, because I'm kind of in that same boat as well.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd put it in the intro, but I mean, you know, it is one of those things, especially nowadays, you're not allowed to talk about things that are too personal with people.
Congratulations, you just had Godless Heathen added to your intro
every
day.
Wow, there you go. All right. So a couple things to get to football-wise here in the first segment. We will have our normal conversation with Jeff Ward at 105. Can't wait for that every week, but this week, since we last spoke with Jeff Ward, the whole Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher thing happened in all of its glory or horrifying, you know, qualities or whatever. So we definitely want to get Jeff's thoughts on that coming up at 105.
He gets tired of this topic, and I completely understand it because I do too. But it's like every week we come in here and we have some fresh storyline to talk about with all of this.
Yeah, and this sick theater chapter of it is just, you can't avoid it. So I want to get his thoughts on that. Also, coming up at 2:05 today, we've got another one of those great interviews that Trey is known for, and this time it is with a legendary Texas athlete, Nolan Ryan, and those around this new movie coming out called Facing Nolan, the new Nolan Ryan documentary that is out. Trey got the interview at South by Southwest, so that's coming up at 2:05. Trey with Nolan Ryan, also Reed Ryan was a part of it as well, right?
Reed Ryan, Reese Ryan, and Bradley Jackson, who is a UT alum and directed this documentary. And the reason why we're playing it today, Chad, is because there is a national screening of Facing Nolan, one-day screening, where they are showing it in theaters across the state and across the country just tonight. And it's a 7 o'clock screening everywhere, including here in Austin. There are three different theaters showing this awesome documentary where they go through and they interview the Ryans, of course, but they also interview all the different people that faced Nolan Ryan over the, what, four decades that he was a pitcher in Major League Baseball, that Hall of Fame career. So the places that you can check it out here in Austin are the Regal Metropolitan Stadium 14, which is 901 Little Texas Lane in Austin. I'm not familiar with that location. Regal Arbor at Great Hills 8. Solid spot to see a movie. And then also South Park Meadows, which I've heard good things about as well. So stay tuned for that. If you don't have any plans tonight, might be worth taking the whole family to check out. The youngsters can maybe gain a greater appreciation for a legend. And yes, I did get about a minute and a half to 2 minutes with Nolan Ryan. And you don't get to see this in the audio, obviously, but there is a video version as well that will eventually be on booksonpod.com, where I get him to give a little bit of a smile in reference to Robin Ventura.
Nice.
Who was one of two people who refused to speak for this documentary.
Of course he did.
Well, that's because Nolan Ryan is still Robin's daddy.
Exactly. So that is coming up later on in the show. We will get to a little NBA, because obviously I have plans tonight. I'm a Mavs fan. I'll be watching the Mavs coming back in this series and, Yeah, anyway.
You almost sold it.
I almost did, yeah. Actually, there's no way I could sell that one. Let's start with the spec set piece. We got some SEC stuff to get to and the future, but first, we'll get to the future of Texas football. Here we go.
The spec set piece is brought to you by Specs Wine, Spirits, and Finer Foods. The biggest saves of the match start at Specs, official partner of Austin FC. Specs, the fun starts here.
All right, Trey, sometimes you may not get what you want, but you get what you need. I think that's what Mick and the boys used to sing about. Longhorns ultimately would have loved Jordan Addison as a wide receiver transfer. Instead, they're going to get a name that I think some Texas fans would know if you're following this conference. I certainly recognize the name. Tariq Milton, a receiver that was at Iowa State, will now come to Texas. Slot receiver, a little bit on the smaller side when you're talking about receivers, but this is a guy that's pretty darn good. I think if he fits in well, this could be a good pickup.
Good route runner, and even though he is slight of frame, he's not somebody that you look at and you think that he's this incredible big play threat, but he made a lot of big plays for Iowa State over the last few years. I love this addition, not only adding depth, but giving a quality Big 12 starter as that fourth wide receiver.
The other thing, I heard Bucky and Aaron talk about part of this today, they were dead on, that when you look at that Iowa State offense, it morphed into more of a two and sometimes even three tight end set mm-hmm. offense when you consider the talent of Kohler and Allen. But the ingredient they didn't bring up in the part I heard them talk about is also the Brock Purdy sucked factor.
Oh, totally.
Let me say that the nice way. The Brock Purdy devolution factor. Mm. Because in 2019, Tariq Milton averaged 21 yards a catch.
Yeah.
But in the next couple years, you could, if you wanted, you could say, well, Tariq Milton obviously fell off. Well, okay, we can put, I'm sure he'll put some responsibility on himself, but A, that offense tweaked it a little bit, but that quarterback did not continue to get better.
No, he did not, and let's also keep in mind that Iowa State was obviously a team that wanted to establish the run. That was the case a few years ago when David Montgomery was in the backfield, but they had Breece Hall these last few years.
Yep.
So knowing that Brock Purdy was a guy who was not evolving at that position, they leaned that much more on the rushing attack because they had one of the best running backs in the country. And that's completely understandable. By the same token, though, I can imagine how frustrated Milton became over these last few years as his quarterback was just having a hard time getting him the football.
Also, if you are into such things, this is the type of wide receiver that used to get Steve Spurrier excited and used to get Steve Spurrier wins. And it's the kind of guy that Steve Sarkisian is also attracted to. It is a wide receiver under 6 feet tall that is a burner, and he played high school football in Florida.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
That's a big one if you're a Longhorn fan.
Love that quality.
This is one of those guys where when I look at it, and as we're getting ready for Texas and Iowa State every year, we're breaking it down, I'll always ask myself, how did a kid from Florida end up in Ames? How did that happen? But then you'll see the talent on the field. I think this is a good pickup. You know, was he ever going to be like somebody's badass number one? No. But Trey, I think he's a really interesting two or three to help them fill things out. We already saw a little bit, enough of Nayer to think that he can be pretty good. You know what Whittington is if he's healthy. We saw what Worthy can be. This receiving group now rounds out in a pretty nice way, I think, with Tariq Milton.
And you've added a couple guys who have serious big play potential because of their speed with Milton, and let's not forget about Hall also.
That's true, yep.
Who I believe as of this week is officially on campus. So both guys are getting to work now. I probably expect Milton to start or to play ahead of Hall, at least at first, even though Hall, I guess, technically may have a year of experience in that Steve Sarkisian offense. But Milton has obviously been playing college football for a while now, and I think that the learning curve will not be nearly as steep for him. But both guys are going to do a great job of not only adding depth and sort of insurance factor if one of those receivers goes down. Let's remember, who's the starting slot for Texas right now, Chad? A guy that we have a ton of respect for, and we know his physical capabilities, but we also know his injury history,
Whittington,
too.
Yeah.
Jordan
right.
Whittington, absolutely. So you have a couple of guys who may be able to just more than adequately back Whittington up and also be out there in those four wide receiver sets.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it all fits together. So congrats to Tariq Milton there, grad transfer from Iowa State.
He's a grad transfer too? Okay, I didn't realize. Not that matters in this day and age, but good for him for getting his degree.
Mm-hmm. He is a grad transfer, if I saw the announcement correctly with his decision. So that is the Texas news to get us started. This other college football story we're getting getting into today, it's a Texas story as well, or at least it's gonna be. If you're a Longhorn fan, you need to start thinking about these type of issues. So next week, they are going to have the SEC spring meetings. Coaches will get together. ADs will get together. They're going to have the meetings. Not media days, but it's spring meetings. So one of the things, and there's a great story that I found at ESPN.com, I believe it's Pete Thamel, breaking down some of the issues they'll get into. And Trey, a lot of people on the soap opera side will be thinking, oh my God, are Jimbo and Nick Saban going to have lunch? Are they going to even see each other? Will they punch each other in the face? But outside of that, there's some big questions the SEC has to figure out. And I think we can lay this out today, and there's a lot of different angles. But here's where we have to start. Until somebody tells us different, Trey, here's the bad news for you, for Cameron, for any other Longhorn fan. You're going to have to watch your team play in the Big 12 in 22, 23, and 24. And 25?
Yes.
It's all the way through 25,
right? I believe
so. So I think...
As of now.
I'm sorry. No. I think the 25 season, that's the first in the SEC, isn't it?
I think it runs through 25. I think initially it was supposed to run through 25, but I am starting to feel optimistic
that
they're going to find their way out of this conference after this next season.
Because I hope you're right. As I recall, the official start of everything when you join a conference is in the summertime. It's a June, July, after the spring sports are done, before the fall sports hit.
I hope you're right.
So I think football of 25 is theoretically the first one for Texas and OU.
After 25 is what this article says. Join the league in 25,
there
excuse
you
me.
Go.
After 25 is for the playoff.
Correct. So we go on that idea until they tell us different, meaning there will be at least, that might be two seasons of Texas and Oklahoma in a Big 12 with Cincinnati and BYU, and we can get to all that. But this article brings up some different ideas. You got the college football playoff that has to be considered, because the playoff will now run as a 14 playoff for sure through that 25 season. Nothing's going to change because of that vote that just went down all the way through the 2025 season. So the first year, in theory, that Texas and Oklahoma are in the SEC is the last season of the current 4-team playoff setup. So then it's what happens after that. So one of the things they may discuss next week is what occurs, could there be expansion, and then there's other ideas that they're trying to figure out. But the other big thing, Trey, is how do you set up the SEC? Apparently they're going to discuss that next week, and according to this story, and according to Greg Sankey, they are considering as many as 40 different ideas. For I actually don't believe that it's that many.
Come on, 40?
That's what they're saying. We'll go over some of the biggest ideas today, some of the things that they're maybe throwing around, and how they're going to set it up. So what we need from you today, if you're a Longhorn fan, Sooner fan, Aggie fan, a fan of any team that's going to be in this SEC coming up, how do you want things arranged? We talked about this a little bit. You want to call it a pod system, that's fine. There's other systems that they're looking at. And there's also an idea thrown out in this story that I think is one of the dumbest ideas I've ever heard.
Can I guess?
Yes.
The intra-SEC postseason?
That's the one.
Yeah, let's not go there yet. I realize that a version of that may be on the table at some point because the alliance is completely idiotic with how they're conducting themselves right now. There's this strange fear that expanding the playoff is going to hurt them, even though it guarantees you actually get a team into the playoff every year and bowl games matter more. And so I think the SEC understands that there may be a true split between these Power Five conferences, but to go SEC only, I think would be an even worse example of cutting off your nose to spite your face than what the alliance did in voting down the playoff expansion a couple months ago.
Yeah, I mean, I get their disappointment in what the alliance did. I share their disappointment
and
in
Sankey
what the alliance did.
Yeah, and Sankey is apparently furious about it too, according to this article.
And that's going to be a part of next week. What does Sankey say when the media talks to him about it? How mad will he get outwardly? Because again, everybody will worry about, and he'll be asked about, you know, Saban and Jimbo and all that, and how much that upset him, whatever. But how much did the 8-3 vote really piss him off? And then would the SEC consider the level of ego where you'd say, you know what, at the end of the year, we'll just do an 8-team playoff. will determine the absolute SEC champion. And then if one of y'all wants to play us, fine. If y'all want to put the alliance together and let those three fight it out and then we'll play that champion, fine. Or if you say you don't want to mess with it, we don't care. I think ultimately that would be a silly way to go because it's just so ego-driven there. And you're really, I mean, you thinking you're cool is fine. Thinking you're really good at football is fine. But you need to be able to prove that, and you need to try to at least keep some of these ideas together.
Mm-hmm.
So the level of anger for Sankey and what he's willing to do with it is a big part of next week.
Now, what I think would be interesting is, let's call it the alt idea off of the SEC postseason tournament, and that is the SEC holds an eight-team tournament where obviously the eight best teams get to play in this postseason. The other eight, maybe they can do a loser's bracket. I'm guessing those eight teams are probably going to want their season to be over with, though, if they're not playing for anything. The winner of that tournament actually does go on to face some other team from another division or
right.
another cluster of conferences.
But you'd have to get them to all agree to that and have it come together. That's the part of it that I don't know. Like, I'm all for trying to progress and tweak things and change things. I don't know that you need to completely rip this system apart at this point.
Oh, I agree.
I think it just needs to expand a little bit, and that ultimately is what Sankey's looking for. But I think he can set that up just fine. I think you're almost getting ahead of yourself if you're the SEC in worrying too much about what the end looks like. I would tell them, no, you need to worry about what Texas and Oklahoma look like in your conference. What is that? And they're going to look at different models and stuff. We'll talk about kind of some of the things that they're looking at. Here's something that encouraged me, Trey. There are comments from Greg Sankey that he doesn't want to see teams go 12 years apart playing each other. He doesn't want to see all those huge gaps of time. It's been pointed out that A&M has only played Georgia one time since they joined the SEC. That's true. And in that time, Bama and Georgia have played regular season like twice.
Yeah, good. I mean, that's kind of on you, Sankey. That's
right.
On you and this league for setting things up like that and making no effort to change that until now.
So do you want to change that part of it? Do you want to stay with eight conference games? Do you want to go to nine? All of those things. But also, do you want to make sure that you're rotating your teams around your conference?
You should want to do that. For as good as the SEC is at scheduling, that's always been one of those things that makes no sense to me. It's like you're keeping these various brands from playing one another more. It's why I think ultimately they do add a conference game, and we see that 3-6-6 schedule.
Yeah, the 3-6 is going to be a big part of their discussion. I kind of hope they zoom in on that, really analyze it, because I think it might be the way they have to go if they're really going to have a little progress there.
So we're up on the break here. Can we continue to talk about this next segment? We'll discuss Boston-Miami just a little bit, some of the things Miami was getting away with in Game 3. They weren't in Game 4. Got to love the roller coaster ride that is officiating crews. So we'll talk about that briefly, but because that wasn't a good game last night, let's get back into some of the other ideas being talked about in this ESPN article.
We will definitely do it. And you let us know what you think. Specs text line 337-3776. Longhorn fans, how do you want that SEC to lay out? Would you like the idea of an SEC eight-team playoff at the end of the year? We'll get back into that. Crap bag talking about a college football tradition we're losing in 2022. I'll be honest, I didn't even know it was alive, but now it's gone. I'll tell you what that is later on. Stay with us. It's the Horn. Gotta let those drums come in. It turns into such a great little jazzy, bluesy, why can't I be in a bar drinking kind of song.
Yep. And this is the Stevie Ray Vaughan version.
This is Stevie's version, yes.
Because it is Texas Tuesday.
That's right. If it's Tuesday, that means Cameron's going to play all Texas artists, and he's been starting with SRV every week. We have no problem with that.
Mm-hmm.
Cameron, you mentioned last time it was discussed that this version you like even better than the Hendrix version.
Yeah, and I think Little Wing is Jimmy's best song. my opinion.
Okay. Fair enough.
Do you have a favorite of those?
That's a good one for the Specs text line.
Yeah.
Best Stevie Ray Vaughan song. That's a tough one. That is like picking your favorite kid if you had 10 of them.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's probably not that popular an answer because it doesn't show the guitar off as much as some of his other popular ones, but Life by the Drop.
That's a great one. That'd be my group. Life by the Drop, Pride and Joy, and If the House is a Rockin' all popped in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And I know The House is a Rockin' is a little more on the poppier side and the more modern, that later version, but I love that song every time I hear it.
Yep.
But Pride and Joy is the song that made me fall in love with Stevie. So
really?
It would probably be that.
Do you remember when you heard that for the first time?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
God, I remember hearing it on the radio and then hearing the acoustic version later when they did MTV Unplugged. It was just like, wow. Unbelievable.
Texas Flood is on my list somewhere.
Yeah, that's
and
a
that's
good
a song
too.
That I got to show my kids for the first time a few months ago, only to have my very strong-headed and opinionated daughter, boy, I wonder where she got that from, say, that's pretty good, Dad, but the guitar's not as good as in Cake by the Ocean.
Oh, that's right. That's the Cake by the Ocean
and
reference.
I got to tell her, honey, you are entitled to your opinion. Just know that you're wrong here because there is not guitar in Cake by the Ocean, and if there were, it's not as good as Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Yeah, that particular Jonas brother would take offense at that. I'm sure there's some incredible guitars that they've placed in that song.
Is there a Jonas brother in that group?
Oh, yeah. I can't remember which one. I think it's Nick. No, is that a Nick or a Joe? Cameron, you know that one?
No.
They're interchangeable.
One of the Jonas brothers is in that band, and they're called DNCE, I think.
Yeah.
It does Cake by the Ocean.
Yeah. Dunce.
Dunce, yeah, exactly. I'm the father of a 15-year-old. Let me just say that's why I know that information. I don't know it on my own. I've got to always qualify that.
That's right. You're the adult at the playground who is on a swing, even though no kids are around you. But your kid is there somewhere.
That's right. Exactly.
And by you, I mean me.
Exactly.
What listeners don't know is that Chad actually texted me. He's like, hey, can we make every day just Harry Styles Day?
Yeah.
It's not true. How dare you? Just because Harry Styles is being discussed way too much in my house right now. All right. One thing that's not being discussed in my house right now is good, compelling, really interesting NBA games because they don't exist. Mavs are down 3-0 and they play tonight. You know we like to be realistic on this show. And Trey, you and I for years have talked about what the NBA has become, and at times it is tough to watch. And these two series are different versions of tough to watch. Now, there have been some runs in the Western Conference series that are all right. There have been closer games. But now it's 3-0, and we know that's essentially over. And one side is even kind of given up after game three. And I'm interested to see if Jason Kidd and Luka Doncic are really ready to go tonight or if they're one foot out the door to vacation. But this Eastern Conference series, if you don't watch a second of it and it gets all the way to like a game seven, I guess you could lie to yourself and say, this has been a really good competitive series. But Trey, every game has included at least a 20-point lead for one team or another. And last night, by the way, Cameron kind of scoffed at me yesterday when I said Boston by 18 with a minute to go, I was dead on. And it finished at 20. Because I've watched this NBA long enough to know it's going to swing the other way, Tatum will play well, and Miami's going to play like garbage. And that's exactly what happened.
People may not realize this. This has been a problem with the NBA for a while now. And that is, yeah, you may have, like you just said, series that go six or seven games. But the games leading up to that point just aren't all that competitive. And in some cases, it's like the league is trying too hard to make sure the series stays even for that ultimate game seven. Chad? The Miami Heat, is it safe to call them the most physical team left in these playoffs?
Yeah, absolutely.
Which means that they foul a lot, but it also means that they do a good job of getting to the basket. The fact that the Boston Celtics shot 38 free throws last night and the Heat shot 14 is a pretty egregious example to me that the NBA was trying to make sure this series ended up even going back to Miami. And the other thing that they did that makes it very simple for them is that they were calling a lot of tic-tac stuff last night when they were letting everything go during game three, which obviously plays to the advantage of the Heat. Where's that middle ground that we can get every game officiated somewhat similarly versus having these drastic swings?
But if I'm going to be fair to the officials, I will also say that the officials and the commissioner's office did not make Miami miss 14 shots to start the game. and they did not make him score 18 combined between the five starters. That's an all-time playoff low. The 0 for 14 to start a game is an all-time playoff low, and Miami had their franchise record for fewest points in any quarter ever with 11 in that first quarter. It was pathetic. I literally watched something else on my DVR, came back to it, and essentially fast-forwarded through just about the whole game because I turned away when it was 18-1, 26-4, or whatever it was. I said, oh, I'll come back and see if this ever gets close. It never did.
Yeah, the longest to start a playoff game without a field goal in 25 years. I think there was a little bit more than 3 minutes left on the clock in the first quarter when they finally hit that first field goal, and Jimmy Butler, you take your cap off to him for playing last night, even though he's clearly still in a bit of discomfort. It's pretty evident that that knee was bothering him. With a 3 of 14 performance, only took two threes, missed them both. And unfortunately for Heat fans, the rest of the team followed suit. Bam Adebayo, who has been so good throughout his career against Boston, once again was close to absent, like he was in games 1 and 2 before the big showing in Game 3. They need more out of him going forward in this series if they're going to advance to the NBA Finals.
Yeah, it was ugly stuff last night, but that series is 2-2. We're probably going to see it now. It's perfect. Now we'll just go back and forth. The home team will win by 20 or 25. The home crowd gets to love it, and let's see if Miami can close it out in Game 7, or does Boston step up and, you know, get a game. But these teams don't play bad two games in a row, but boy, can they not play well at the same time. I don't know how to get them to do it. Hopefully we see that by the end of the series. Mavs play tonight. Trey, I'm terrified they're going to get swept because Golden State puts a little run on them in the beginning, and the Mavs just lean towards the vacation. Luka and Jason Kidd, very comfortable after Game 3, saying that this is the beginning of something, not the end of something. We're ahead of schedule. Luka said, I'm only 23 years old. And it's just this almost defeatist kind of attitude. Because if I'm Golden State, Trey, I can go home, rest, and the finals don't start until a week from Thursday.
Yeah, you never like to hear your team taking the moment for granted. And that is a bit of a defeatist attitude, but it is also real talk. Also, and Jason Kidd has been pretty good at that, and perhaps that's rubbing off on his superstar point guard.
Yeah, the laziness aspect of it. Both sides, I wonder, will the Mavs get lazy because they're down 3-0? Will Golden State get lazy because they know they have to go home anyway? Might as well bring the Mavs with them and blow them out in Game 5.
I could see them laying an egg like what we saw in Memphis in Game 5 last round, where they end up getting beat by 40 or whatever it was, but they're dancing at the end of the game. Yeah. To where if you're watching that as a Memphis fan, you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's bad stuff.
They are loose. They clearly aren't letting this one game affect them. They have a certain stoic manner about them like that, which makes sense because their head coach is that. And sure enough, they were locked in for that very next game to close it out.
Yeah, tough stuff. If you're an NBA fan, you're not seeing great stuff now. 8 o'clock tonight on TNT for the Western Conference. We're also talking about the football future of the SEC. They'll have spring meetings next week. We're talking about how they might set things up. Trey, this listener texts us, every year, play your pod plus another pod. That would be 7 games plus 2 wild card matchups from any other pod for 9 conference games. One of the biggest decisions they have to make is how many conference games they want to play. One idea that they're throwing out, Trey, is a 1-7.
I hate this idea.
I do too. You only have one team you have to play every year. You rotate everything else. Trey, there's only one problem with that. There's too many traditional matchups.
Exactly.
So you can't just lock. If you lock Texas and Oklahoma together, then okay, they're not playing the Aggies every year. They're not playing Arkansas every year. They're not doing. But then look at a team like Bama. You're going to say Bama and Auburn play. That's the logical. But then you're going to tell Tennessee they're not playing Bama?
Right.
Now, I'd be thrilled if I'm a Tennessee fan that I don't have to play Bama.
But
hell, it's
yes.
Historical. So there are historical matchups they're going to take a look at. Georgia's another great example. You're going to take Georgia, who has historically, they have a big rival with Auburn because it's that oldest in the South deal.
Mm-hmm.
But then Florida is the automatic.
Yeah.
So you can't. You've got to have them play both those teams.
Well, Georgia is probably going to lose Auburn annually if they do the 3-6-6. Just like Florida and LSU will not be playing every year going forward.
Yeah, one of those is acceptable. Georgia cannot not play Auburn.
Alabama will still be able to play Auburn, and I'm guessing Tennessee ends up in their pot also if they go 3-6-6.
That's the way they should.
But there are some of those matchups that we're just going to have to accept go away.
Oof. I'll be shocked if Georgia-Auburn is gone. You may be right, though. That's what they're going to have to look at, and you're going to have those politics in the room, the politics of tradition of the SEC. You know, they're going to try to balance it out between all that tradition and how do you stay modern and do you need to, you know, add a conference game? And then also, how many bad non-conference games are you going to allow? They pride themselves on it. They fix their years around four of those possibilities. Some teams don't have the four possibilities because of other rivals, but are they going to still allow the pancake in November, the pillow week, as I call it, before your big matchup in November, you get an easy one. They'll probably still do that. You got to figure out how to construct it. So I'm with you. I think the 3-6 is what makes total sense. We've talked about a world where Texas would play the Sooners, the Aggies, and the Hogs every year, and then rotate six other games, and that's how you get nine conference games. Give everybody the option of three non-conference games. Make them as hard or as easy as you want. And then move on.
Yeah, but let's stop scheduling the true cupcake games that are ending up on a lot of teams' schedules where they're not even in the FBS category in some examples now.
I would love for them. Saban has said this too. Again, he says some weird things over the years, but he's a guy that has said he wishes they would make a rule that you can't play a 1AA, an FCS.
Doesn't Alabama still play that, though?
Oh, yeah, because he's allowed to. He plays it.
Well, lead by example, Nick.
That's what I've said for years, but he won't do that. If he can schedule Western Carolina, he's going to do it. Will they still continue to allow that kind of thing? That's going to be something to look for. But also, Trey, just in this next week or so, could we possibly get an indication from the SEC for sure? Texas and Oklahoma will begin play here.
Mm-hmm.
Is the assumption 25? Because there's just, like, can we make it official? Can they say it? Can somebody please ask Greg Sankey, hey, Mr. Commissioner, when are Texas and Oklahoma starting in this conference? And then if he could say, oh, it's September of 25. Okay, then at least we all know.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't said it yet. There hasn't been a media release. There hasn't even been discussion of the official kind of welcome to the conference.
Well, that's because they're still trying to work that out. And if Texas and Oklahoma have their way, and I'm assuming if the Big 12 has its way also, those two schools will pay whatever the exit fee is, line the Big 12's pockets a little bit, and go about their merry way. This is a broken relationship at this point. This is a relationship where it's not a one-to-one comparison necessarily, but the parents are kind of still staying in the same house for the sake of the kids. It's less about the kids here and more about the contract in play and the fact that, especially on Oklahoma's side, which is completely understandable, by the way. They just can't foot that tens of millions of dollars to just leave the conference, up and leave the conference. Texas can afford it because Texas is the rich kid who can afford to make these mistakes or make these moves and not have to worry about it nearly as much financially. Oklahoma lives in more of a real world compared to most other colleges where it's just not that simple for them.
So next week, spring meetings for the SEC is the reason we're talking about this today, and there's a lot of ideas being thrown out. Let us know what you would like the SEC to do, especially if you're a Texas or Oklahoma fan and you're going to be new to it in 25 or whenever it is going to happen. We'll continue that discussion. We will talk some Saban and Fisher with Jeff Ward at 105 because all that happened since we spoke to him last. Up next, though, in the crap bag, what college football tradition is going away in 2022 for a very political reason. This is The Horn.
On the road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again. The life I love is making music with my friends. And I can't wait to get on the road again. On the road again. Places that I've never been.
It is Texas Tuesday. All Texans on the music side. I'm not going to insult everybody by saying who this is or what the song is called. My question is this, Trey.
Pointer Sisters?
Is there an acceptable person right now that doesn't recognize this song well enough to either tell me the title or the artist? What's the acceptable person? A child?
The age, yeah.
Right? If you're under 10, you're allowed. What if you're my daughter's age? If you're 15 and I played that for and she couldn't identify it? That's not right, is it? I would have done something wrong as a parent.
My kids probably don't know a whole lot of Willie Nelson.
Okay.
So that's 7 and 5.
All right. Fair enough.
Am I doing something wrong? So, Am I committing passive child abuse?
I don't think you're there yet. Yeah, you're still in that area.
They're not subjected to a ton of country, though.
I don't expect a 7-year-old to know. Full-grown adults, though, you got to know, man.
It's a little bit shameful that they can tell you Imagine Dragons and Taylor Swift and some other acts, some other pop acts, but not Willie Nelson. Shame on me, Chad. Shame on me.
I can argue this is the most, I don't know, commercially successful Willie Nelson song. I haven't looked at the numbers, but I would guess it probably is. This song holds up in such a really cool way.
Yeah.
Like, it's way, trust me, I was there at the time. It got played a lot. It was a massive hit for him, but it still holds up well over time.
What year was this?
It's Willie. Oh, I'm going to guess this is 80 to 80, 82, 85, okay. Somewhere in that range.
All right.
Give me a year on that, Cameron, when you can. Willie Nelson and SRV to start the show. Not bad. Not bad at all. You're darn right you're cheering him. It's Willie Nelson, dadgummit. All right. Hope you are having a good Tuesday. More Texas artists coming up on the show. We got Jeff Ward coming in at 105 to talk about the Saban Fisher stuff, future of the SEC, all of that college football discussion. Speaking of college football, let's get into the crap bag and tell you what's not going to be flying in 22.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
Brought to you by AV Consultations, 255-8678, or go to avconsultations.com. I'll be honest, I didn't know about this tradition, so I apologize to everyone in Big Red Nation. Trey, are you aware that Nebraska has a tradition that involves balloons?
Not until I saw a headline this morning. So now I have an idea of where you're headed, but what is the tradition?
I had no idea this even existed. The tradition, as I'm understanding it, is that the crowd arms themselves with helium-filled balloons, and red ones, as you can imagine, and after the first touchdown that Nebraska scores in the game, they release the balloons.
Mm.
So that tradition is going away because of a global helium shortage.
Whoa.
Because one of the big suppliers of helium on this planet is none other than Russia.
Mm.
And once the whole thing started with the Ukraine and sanctions began against Russia from different countries, this became an issue. So Trev Alberts and the folks at Nebraska are saying we've got to use the helium for the really important stuff if we're getting helium. We got to use the helium in, medical situations or other emergency situations. We can't be using as much helium for these balloons, so it will not be there in 2022.
Got to keep tightening our belts, Chad.
Yes. I did have an idea, though. I had a little epiphany idea for them. What they could do is come up with some kind of app on a phone, maybe something people could access on their computers, where they go in and release virtual balloons, and every time they do it, you're raising money for something. You're collecting money for some kind of charity and try to make something good out of this.
Based on the last 2 years and seeing just how lame the virtual version of live whatever is, much of it being done because of the pandemic, I completely understand that, but also getting a lesson in how virtual doesn't come close to the real thing, let's maybe find something else.
Yeah, my thought was, is there something you could do with your phone or something you could do at the game? Maybe it's they ask for donations on the way into the game, out of the game, whatever. I don't know how the balloon thing works, but they'll figure it out.
Maybe, because Nebraska fans have a well-earned reputation of being so nice to one another and to opposing fans. You said it's after a first touchdown?
Yes, the first touchdown for
them. After that first touchdown, you turn to the person to your left and tell them to go bleep themselves.
Yeah, that could be good. That could be good. The other weird part of it is the reason that I may not have known that it existed, it's been 10 years since they scored a touchdown. So, no, that's not true.
Ooh.
That's not true. This says, I'm with Chad, though. I've even been to a game at Nebraska, and I don't remember the balloon thing. I've just never heard of this.
Yeah, it surprised me when you described it after seeing a headline this morning, because it's something that I had no awareness of.
I'd never heard of that before. It's an interesting idea. And then also there's an environmental reason you might not want to release balloons. Years ago, somebody filed a lawsuit against Nebraska claiming the dangers of the balloons once they come back down, dangers to wildlife, dangers to the area, things like that. So they'll at least avoid that moving forward.
I assumed that was the reason. Whenever I saw the headline, is because of environmental concerns, and that would have been understandable. This is obviously understandable, too, though. Yeah. While we're at it, speaking on Nebraska and things that inflate at games, can we get rid of that walking nightmare that is that inflatable that walks around at home games?
Anti-Little Red now?
Dude, that thing
Big
is...
Big Red, Little Red, what do they call them?
The stuff of terror.
There's like seven of them now. They keep adding one, like every year.
I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
Because if they're trying to get any sort of advantage on the opposition, it's having those things walk around during games.
I will say, though, Big Red, I think they call them Big Red and Little Red. I think that's what it is. That one is the first one I saw where the person got upside down inside the thing and started jumping down on its, like it's, you know, bouncing on its own head.
That's part of it. That thing goes poltergeist.
I thought that was pretty cool. I kind of liked it. If you're going to be in the big blow up inflatable thing, do it the right way.
Go crazy.
Cam? ET has one.
Cam, pro or negative inflatable mascots?
I think they're a little weird. Because okay. UT has the Bevo inflatable. It's just like, why? Like, what's the purpose of this? We already got Bevo and the best live mascots. We need a fake inflatable.
Right.
So one thing working in favor of that inflatable that UT has versus Hook'em, the mascot that walks around, the inflatable, less of a pedo vibe than Hook'em.
No, brother. Oh my God.
I know from experience.
I was about to say, what did a mascot do to you when you were a kid?
Like age 3 or 4.
It's terrible.
Mascot groped me inappropriately at a basketball game, and I will hold it against every Hook'em going forward because of it.
So wrong. So wrong. Somebody says, I have been to Lincoln for a game. The balloon thing is, they say, effing dumb. It's a big six-year-old's birthday. That's what it looks like. So they won't have that.
Are we sure they're not just scapegoating Russia because, like you said, Chad, they only kick field goals. They don't score touchdowns.
Jeez. You guys.
There we go. We took two direct shots right at the Nebraska offense on that one.
Well, their second and third options for the excuse as to why they're getting rid of the balloons was the pandemic and then also 9/11. So
right.
I guess this is the most recent version to go with here.
Crap bag every day at 12:45. The thing's rattling around my skull, and I thought I'd talk about the tradition I didn't even know about. Up next, last time we talked with Jeff Ward, the Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher thing hadn't happened yet. What did he make of the back and forth? We'll talk to him about some college football issues coming up. Then at 1:30, we'll get into our Flex 30 segment. There's been a slight change to the 7-on-7 schedule for this weekend, and we'll tell you about another one of those talented quarterbacks that I got to look at in the 7-on-7 last weekend. Stay with us. It's the Horn.